And there are nonprofits that are doing better, who are like, and I mentioned this to you guys before the show, Outlier Media in Detroit, their entry-level jobs are like $50,000, $60,000 entry-level jobs. They make an effort to pay people. And then they train people to be documenters, you know, average citizens off the street. This is how you attend a meeting. This is how you read the agenda. This is how you take notes, take photographs, how you live tweet. And that raw material then goes back to the newsrooms at Outlier. And a journalist will edit that and put it into a database so everybody can see what happened at these stinking meetings that we don't have enough people to cover anymore. So I tell them, you have value. Don't let people walk over. You have an internship, make sure it's paid. You go look for jobs that are paying you. And don't lead to burnout. You know, it's easier said than it's a lot of preaching and maybe less practicing, I guess.
Is that a common topic where you're at too?
Well, yeah, it is. And in fact, you know, we have a class called Media Business and Entrepreneurship, which kind of stands alone in our program. And one of the modules of that course is teaching students how to negotiate a contract when they go to get a job. You know, not just what the salary is going to be, but also the working conditions. And to let students know, you know, you're not just a cog in a machine. You're an important component, or they wouldn't be hired.
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive, and you can connect with them at BloxDigital.com. Hello, and welcome back to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. Today, we are jumping back into the world of student journalism, which is, I like that we get to do this every once in a while, because we'll talk about training the next generation of this great industry and seeing how we're preparing those student journalists to come in and get going. And I love my guest this week. It's an old buddy of mine, Matt Birdmeyer. From Matt, what's your college again?
Monroe County Community College.
Monroe County Community College.
Southeast Michigan.
You are now the advisor. We were reporters together long, long, long ago. And then also with us is Stephen Chappell, the advisor at Northwest Missouri State University, one of my rivals back when I was in college. But we'll be nice to him now because he's running an awesome program. And actually, what you call your program, I love, which is why I'm glad you're here, which is Career Ready Day One. So your goal is to get students ready to run as soon as they graduate and leave the program. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Well, let's just jump right in. How do you have people career ready day one? Because journalism is different. How we gather the news, how we produce the news, how we deliver the news is very different from when we all first got into the industry, and you have to know a lot more, do a lot more. How does that actually happen? How do you have people ready to run?
Well, Steve, do you mind if I
think a lot of it has to do with how our program is structured. We have hands-on classes. Practically every class we teach is a hands-on class. In fact, there are probably only two classes in our program that aren't hands-on classes, and I teach one of them, and that's communication theories, and then the other one is law and ethics. And those are the two classes our students hate the most because they're not doing hands-on journalism. But every class we've created is meant to help build a student's skills. And every one of those classes, while it may have a particular focus on a type of technical skill, still at the core of that class is storytelling, which we think is the most important aspect of any media person, is telling a story in whatever format it is you plan to work. And throughout the entire 4 or 5 or 6 years a student may be in college, everything we do is a part of that. And then another big component of it isn't just the classroom experience. We have three students are required to take 3 hours of what we call practicum credit, and they have to work for student media. And the practicum classes are 1 credit hour or 2 credit hours, so they're going to have to do it at least 2 semesters. So they either have to work for our TV station, our radio station, our newspaper, or our yearbook, or a combination of those at some point during their college career, and get some hands-on practical experience producing real media.
Yeah, because you can't just do one thing anymore.
Right.
Right.
I mean, you know, I'm an old writer and print designer, and when I launched my own thing, who knew that 80, 90% of my content was going to be this?
Right, right. I mean, yeah. You know, my undergraduate degree was so specialized compared to today. Mine was in copy editing.
Oh, wow.
We have 1 copy editing class at Northwest, not an entire degree program.
I've never heard such a thing. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's an amazing, you know, it was a great experience, but it doesn't exist anymore. Nobody has a degree in copy editing anywhere.
Well, good news for us is I just brought back a copy editing class to our school. Editing and layout, or editing and design, I should say. But
Yeah,
I think we saw a lot of those spots in newsrooms kind of disappear and become absorbed by other positions. But no matter what tool or storytelling ability that we're talking about, especially when we start talking about AI generating stuff, like, you still have to edit.
Right.
You still have to read the copy and go through it and make sure.
You know, one of my side gigs is I run a Twitter feed called Com Internships that just posts internships and entry level jobs for students in media. And when it comes to copy editing, when you see a copy editing job today, it's not a copy editing job. It's a page design job that does copy editing.
Right.
You know, it used 100%. To be the newsroom, there was a page designer and a copy editor. Now that's the same person. And usually they even call it the news editor. You assign the stories, you edit the stories, you design the pages. So, you know, everything's been combined into one thing.
That it's good that those are separated, that I was never the copy editor. I was the page designer.
What's interesting is AEJMC, the Association for Education and Journalism Mass Communication, they have a workshop called, or a panel discussion called Breakfast of Editing Champions. And it's sort of waxed and waned over the years. And it's one of the most favorite workshops that I go to, or panels, I should say. They talk about the importance of teaching editing in college campuses, and to continue to do that and to strengthen that area. It's really interesting.
I want to go backward, because you said the word storytelling earlier, and I feel like that is a word we embrace a lot more now than we used to. I feel like it was probably a bad word, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It wasn't storytelling, it was reporting. But now we kind of embrace that, and we talk about how can we best tell this story? How can we repackage it in 5 different ways for different mediums and channels? How important, I mean, is that changing that word, that language, is that as big a deal as I think?
You know, I don't know that it's that big of a deal. I think it's just a matter of keeping up with the change in industry. You know, when you have 50 different media outlet options to read the same report, the one that gives you the most engaging story is the one you're going to go to. You know, I think about sports storytelling. There's been tons of startups over the years. Tons of things have come and gone. I can read the Kansas City Star. I can read the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for Cardinals and Royals news. But when I want good storytelling, I always go to The Athletic now. That's where I look for my good sports storytelling, because they seem to do it the best. And I think most of our consumers in this market, where there's so much competition, they're looking for an outlet that tells the reporting in a compelling way, whether that's in video, audio, print, or a combination of all three, which is what we strive to teach our students.
Okay, well, let's hone in on that, and I'll start with you, Matt.
Sure.
How are you teaching that to be compelling, but to tell it in 3 different ways? I mean, you've got to be able to produce a written copy. We had someone, a couple of guests from the University of Alabama a couple weeks ago, and you know, she talked, everything starts with writing. So you've got to be able to write the story and tell it that way. But then you've also got to have a video component. You've got to have an audio component. So what is the preparation like for teaching that?
Yeah. So at our school, it's a 2-year school, and which is kind of why I wanted to go first, because it's hard to follow up with after Steven's program, because Steven's program is really strong. If you look at their broadcast studio, it's like a production house. You know, it's really fascinating the amount of equipment that they have there. They can do everything, and not
we even have our own TV truck now.
It's amazing. Yeah, and not to toot your horn too hard, but you are sort of the paper of record there in Maryville. You know, there I think there is like a local paper, right? But it's very weak. And the Northwest Missourian? Is that
We're the Northwest Missourian, and then there's the Maryville Forum, and yes. Then there's also the Nottoway County News Leader, which is more like that old-timey newspaper that's just all the gossip columns and everybody writing in about who came to visit who this week.
Oh, right. Yeah. Did that a lot in Higginsville.
I like bringing those back, though. Come on. Those are great.
Yeah. But at a 2-year school, you know, it's foundational stuff. You know, we're teaching them structure, style, basics of editing, and, you know, how to be interesting and how to think critically. You know, that's an important thing. And it's a lot of hands-on work. Our classes are hands-on, just like Stephen was saying. And our newspaper is credit-based, it's class-based. So there are 3 workshops, 3-hour, 3-credit-hour workshops. And if they want to do it a 4th semester, it's an independent study kind of deal. And we also partner with the local, PEG channel, the public access television station. And so I get the kids into that studio there, and they work on a TriCaster camera switching board, you know, and we do a 3-camera setup interview show there. So they get some hands-on experience doing that. But your initial question was, how do we prepare them to tell stories, how to be storytellers, Nick? Is that kind of where you're going with that?
Yeah, well, I think the reason there is because we're teaching storytelling, but we're teaching it 4 different ways.
Yeah. And my perspective is, you know, be creative and be independent. And by being creative, I give them a good amount of latitude to do interesting and fun stuff. You know, when we came back after the pandemic, you know, we lost our print product for a while. And I gave them the option of doing something different. I ran across a professor at AEJMC last year in Detroit who was walking around with a satchel full of zines. And her community college in Santa Ana, California, primarily produces zines, and they're web first. But their zines are really creative. You know, it's this whole punk do-it-yourself kind of ethos, you know, slap it together kind of look to it, but it's fun and it's creative, and it piques people's interest, you know, more than the old stuffy headline newspaper kind of look. So I encourage creativity and independence, you know, independently being, I should say enterprising. Find your own stories. And those are the stories that you're going to want to tell. And those are the stories you'll tell the best. And have more like, put more heart and soul into it, you know?
Is that a kind of steering away from the traditional beat reporting then? Not at all.
Well, so we don't have a lot of beats. We have club beats at our paper. It's a small campus where the kids, once they're done with classes, they kind of bounce. They don't really hang around, you know? So our beats are mostly club-based, but the publications themselves are thematic, you know? So they'll throw all of their effort into putting together a voting, an election sort of heads up. This is what's on the ballot. This is how to register to vote. This is where to vote. What else do we do? Hidden gems on campus, things that are out of sight, out of mind. We don't have sports, so there's not a sports beat kind of thing. But We've got one person who's focused on the board of trustees and the administration. So in a way there are still beats, but the zines are thematic and they're very focused. And every day we try to have something on online on the website. So kind of this web first mentality as well.
That's a common theme. And I'm going to say probably the last six episodes of this podcast, it's been think digital first. Is, you know, the story starts with a digital delivery and then use your other tools to tell more of the story. Is that a similar thing to what you're doing?
Oh, heck yeah. Absolutely. And push it out on social media and maybe go even longer form in print. But see, when we went to zines, it's a smaller format. So it's like 8.5 by 11 folded in half kind of deal. We're looking to maybe go back to tabloid in the fall. But yeah, web first, it's huge. And we push that out via an email newsletter as well. So we're really fortunate to have an administration that's okay with us using the outlet code. It's a numbered code. So if you put in a 1 or a 2 or a 3 or a 4, you target a specific mass audience. And so we can mass email the entire campus, our email newsletter, instead of having to fight with the registrar or whatever for, you know, names and addresses and stuff. Right. We're really lucky to have that. Don't tell them I said that.
I don't think we can stress enough the importance of the email newsletter these days. I mean, yeah. you have to have a successful email program.
Absolutely.
The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com.
Yeah, I would say so. I think most of our stronger journalism programs nationally are doing that. With our storytelling focus, you know, really it starts with just first teaching them the basic skills. You know, we have a professional media writing class. It's an introduction to writing that teaches students how to write both journalistically and for radio and TV and PR. We have a class we call Fundamentals of Electronic Media Production, which is essentially just a hands-on skills class to teach students how to use all of our equipment in all of our studios so they don't break it when they start using it regularly. You know, that's the whole point of that class. And, you know, so we start with those two classes, and then we have, you know, we have intro to audio, intro to video, teaching those skills, and then reporting, advanced reporting, class on the multimedia journalism side. Advanced reporting is replaced by sports broadcasting and sports reporting in our sports media emphasis. So we kind of build on each of those skills and each of those technical aspects as we go through it. But we also try to teach them how to tell the story in all those different formats. When they're in the reporting class, we're focusing on the written word. But when they're in advanced reporting, they've already taken both audio and video. And advanced reporting is teaching them how to take that written story and turn it into a compelling audio piece and a compelling video companion piece. So, you know, our structure of our academic program was designed to lead them through a multimedia focus, whether their focus is on multimedia journalism or on sports, or in our, we have an audio video program, broadcast production, and then students can sub specialize in either audio or video. Most students do both. And then we also have advertising. And then we have another major called content strategy that takes advertising and PR and combines them with classes in our art program and in our marketing and business program. So, and that is our probably second fastest growing major, with sports being our fastest growing emphasis in the program.
That's
so many students want to focus on sports.
That surprises me a little bit, because I feel like as the industry has changed a little bit, and even as our audiences have changed, I feel like especially at the local and the not giant college level, sports reporting and has kind of taken a hit, that it's not the desired thing anymore. I mean, I used to say that in community journalism, I mean, you know, it started with sports because the whole town was going to buy everything sports related.
Oh, local sports is huge. Yeah.
And I wondered, is that the same?
Well, here, you know, local sports is everything. You're talking about a city, Maryville, Missouri. When you drive into town, all of the signs that welcome you to Maryville say welcome to Titletown, because both Northwest and Maryville High School sports have won so many state and national championships in the last two decades. So everybody here lives and breathes sports. And our student media outlets all cover the city as much as we cover the campus. We cover all of the high school sports. We cover city government. We cover county government. If it's happening in town, it's just as important to us as if it happened on campus. And when you have a successful athletic program like Northwest does, you have a lot of student athletes who come here. Maybe one of all of our student athletes will get to go pro.
Right.
Because we're a Division II school. We're not a Division I school. But they're still at the top of Division II. But they know how do they get to stay in sports the rest of their lives? They become sports media people. Mm-hmm. So a big chunk of our sports media majors are all athletes.
That's got to be an interesting line to walk as you work with those students. Mm-hmm. That they're part.
Yeah, you have to make certain that
they're part of the program they're learning to cover.
Right. So they can't cover any sport that they're personally involved with is one of the first rules of thumb. You know, if you're on the track team, you can't cover track.
And Steve, how many do you have on staff at the Missourian?
Paid staff, we have 15, and then the companion practicum class, we usually have about 30 students in it. So we'll have about 45 students working for the newspaper any given semester.
Yeah, so I'm lucky to have 6 or 8 or 10, you know. Yeah. It's really difficult to get kids interested in the student newspaper. But when they are, it's like because they want to be involved on campus. It's not that they want to go into that field, you know. But what I enjoy the most is having an accounting student in my intro to mass media class, you know, where we talk about movie, you know, film, radio, TV, advertising, journalism, everything. And we'll listen to me talk about journalism and say, you know what, I want to get involved and then pursue that area. So at that community college, it's a true community asset, a community resource. We don't turn anybody away. You know, anybody can come and take classes and stuff. And it's really interesting to get those plumbers and accountants and film people interested in journalism to figure, you know, they see what it's like outside of that filter bubble where they're hearing just one side of newspapers or the news is it's all bad and it's biased and it's fake and it's this and that. And it's like, well, no, this is what it's like. You know, if you do something that is fake, you get fired. You know, that's really not how it works. So anyway, that's
well I think that leads to the question, you know, are people still going for the industry? I mean, have you seen a drop in interest at the student level? You know, here personally, locally, I work with some of the local high schools, and those programs are still pretty good size, and there's a lot of students that are interested in doing it and are pursuing it at the college level after graduation. Are you still seeing those same levels of interest as kids go into school? And we shouldn't say kids, they're college students, they're not kids.
So at our high school, you know, we have a really large high school here, and they have a really good journalism program with a TV component, they have a broadcast component and newspaper. And our their competitor, Bedford, right down the road, they have an even larger kind of program. So yes, there is interest on the high school level, but some come to community, but others go elsewhere. Specs Howard is a big kind of broadcasting film kind of specialized school. MSU, Michigan State University, is a preeminent journalism program there. And U of M doesn't have a journalism program, but they have a really strong independent student newspaper there. In fact, the New York Times did this story about the growing news deserts that we have in America, and used Arizona colleges in Arizona and Michigan as an emblematic case for how student newspapers are filling those gaps. And they focused on, in particular, in Ann Arbor when they lost their daily newspaper for the, and this story was published in 2019. So for the past 10 years before that, prior, the University of Michigan's student newspaper was the paper of record in Ann Arbor. It was amazing, you know, and these kids doing, you know, schoolwork and working full time and covering city council and planning and zoning and all that crap that was going uncovered, you know, for the longest time.
Well, and Stephen, I think that goes to what you just said. They don't just cover the campus. It's important that they learn to cover the community and to do it all.
Right. And here, you know, even though there's a local weekly newspaper outside of the Missourian, it has 5 employees. And, you know, it has 1 sports person who is literally covering 15 different high schools in the fall and spring by right. himself. Whereas I can send out a team of 10 to cover everything on a Friday night, and right. he has to pick and choose which game he goes to. So, you know, it makes for, you know, which paper do you want to pick up the next week and read all the yeah. coverage in? Or which website are you going to go to the next morning to read all the coverage in? Right. You're going to go to the one that was at all of the games.
Right.
So it's been, you know, that's been a big component of our infusion into the community and being the paper of record for a lot of things in Maryville, because we have the staff to cover far more.
So here,
and of course the local publisher of the Maryville Forum, he'll complain to me that I have a disadvantage because, you know, I don't have to pay anybody, and he's right. I give them a grade, but yeah. you know, we don't have to pay them.
You have some paid staff. You know,
yeah, we have some paid staff, but
wait, you mean
you know, he has the advantage of being the only one here in the summer because we don't do anything in the
NIL
summer.
Deals.
Yeah, that would be great.
I'm trying to keep this program alive, you know, with the few people who are interested, and I don't want them to burn out. You know, the Hussman School of Journalism, UNC, just had to publish this article, this study, long-term study about burnout in the industry. And it's not individual burnout. It's institutional-wide. You know, these newsrooms across the country are burning people out. You know, they're laying off people. They're bringing in kids from our schools and work them, you know, entry-level pay isn't that great. So they're not making a lot of money, but they're doing more. They have to do everything. The written story, the social media, a video component. What am I missing? Photos.
Do you talk about that as teachers and instructors? Do you talk about that with students, about workload and about...
But before you answer, Steve, I do. And I tell them, you have value, guys. You know, don't let these folks walk over you. And there are corporations that are walking over people, and there are nonprofits that are doing better, who are like, and I mentioned this to you guys before the show, Outlier Media in Detroit, their entry-level jobs are like $50,000-$60,000 entry-level jobs. They make an effort to pay people. And then they train people to be documenters, you know, average citizens off the street. This is how you attend a meeting. This is how you read the agenda. This is how you take notes, take photographs, how you live tweet. And that raw material then goes back to the newsrooms at Outlier. And a journalist will edit that and put it into a database so everybody can see what happened at these stinking meetings that we don't have enough people to cover anymore. So I tell them, there, you have value. We, you know, don't let people walk over. You have an internship, make sure it's paid. You go look for jobs that are paying you, and don't lead to burnout. You know, it's easier said than it's a lot of preaching and maybe less practicing, I guess.
Is that a common topic where you're at too?
Well, yeah, it is. And in fact, you know, we have a class called Media Business and Entrepreneurship, which kind of stands alone in our program. And one of the modules of that course is teaching students how to negotiate a contract when they go to get a job, you know, not just what the salary is going to be, but also the working conditions. And to let students know, you know, you're not just a cog in a machine. You're an important component, or they wouldn't be hiring you. They wouldn't have this position still if they didn't need you. But they also need to realize that they can't just abuse you to the point that you can't do the job anymore. And I've had students leave here and take jobs that within 18 months of graduating, they're done with media. because that job just wore them to a nub. And I work really hard to make certain that students don't take those jobs, because there are a lot of small town media outlets in the Midwest that want you to work 60 hours a week for $25,000 a year.
Criminal. Absolutely criminal.
Matt and I never did that.
Oh my God.
Well, the problem is you did that 30 years ago when $25,000 you could actually kind of live on.
It was decent. It wasn't bad.
Look, I'm here
to have my 401k.
Well, Stephen, Matt, hey, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate your insight into the college training of our student journalists and into the industry as well. And appreciate your work that you're doing. Thank you guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That'll wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time. The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.